and principals consultant for Gaia Media. We do work for Fortune 500 companies doing both managed hosting through our HostCube service, and also we do consulting for people who have their own data centers. With that said, you know, we definitely feel public really makes a big difference. During, like George said, during time during the presentation, you want to ask a question, definitely feel free. Definitely want to flow with the audience as far as how much, you know, you want to get in depth or not. It's totally up to you guys. The first question I want to ask you guys, again, to get a feel of the audience, is how many servers do you guys currently manage? And I just show them, raise their hands. Do you guys manage less than 25? Okay. Do you show manage between 25 and 100? Okay. How about 100 to 250? Okay. 250 plus? Okay. So you guys definitely, the higher end, without a question, need some sort of automation. So what's really wrong with administration today? I mean, honestly, I came to really be in the Stone Age. Administration really needs to be modernized to the 21st century. And really, there's nowadays too many servers and services. Gone are the days of a centralized, you know, IBM mainframe with one server with one administrator. Who have, I mean, at minimum now, you know, like the audience told me, have quite a few, you know, servers to manage. And on top of that, the different services. You have HTTP, you have LDAP, you have database servers, you have what, mail servers and whatnot. Too many different operating systems. I mean, just in BSD alone, you have a wide variety of different variances. Not enough time. That's the other big issue, in my opinion, is you really, you know, you're really focusing on putting out the fires as opposed to managing day-to-day operations. Mostly a manual process. That's the other big issue I have with it. It's really a manual process. You're doing, you know, operations akin, you know, no different than, say, 20, 30 years ago. You're using the SSH command line and entering your commands to install software. No feedback loop. If you guys wanted a, let's say if you installed a piece of software, how do you know it was installed correctly? That's one of the other issues I have with it, as far as you don't know if your software is installed correctly, and then how does your boss know what you're doing is actually good work? How do you know you need more disk space? How do you know if you're, you know, need more bandwidth? Best practices are not shared. Really, I consider a lot of system administrators not share their best practices with each other, for one reason or another. So with that said, system administration is still pretty much a lone operation. And obviously, if they do fail, a lot of money is lost. And with today's practices, system administration is becoming much more important than that. Automation tools in general, they're really just independent silos. They're not really, they don't speak to each other. A perfect example, at least in the open source community, is Nagios and CapDoc. They're great, you know, tools in themselves, but they don't communicate with each other. And they're not really exactly modern. In fact, they kind of suck. So why do they suck? Monitoring is immature, requires too much effort. Few, if any, built-in feedback loops, meaning, again, you execute something, does it actually execute successfully? Do you know if it actually executes successfully? Each tool is an independent silo, again, using CapDoc and Nagios as a perfect example of that. All failures really need to direct human intervention. That's, again, another big issue. No sharing of best practices and manual process prone to errors. And again, security policies, a lot of cases, people do it via documentation. It's via a wiki, a Word document, what have you. Okay, so how does Puppet help that? Puppet is a programming language that helps automate system administration. I put it in simple terms, it's the glue between your resources and your configuration files. And really, just like the akin to package management, modern Unixes, as opposed to compiling their own source code, Puppet adds that next level of automation. Allows for repeatable, another way to define it is allows repeatable system and best practices. so you can actually repeat your best practices on a daily basis and repeat it to every new installation you do. Luke Kinney, the actual founder of Puppet, creator of Puppet, I don't know if you can read it, but it says, I want Puppet to be the equivalent of bringing a gun to a knife fight. Okay, what's Puppet's features? It's open source, GPL, built on top of Ruby. Puppet itself is its own programming language. It's a declarative language as far as it describes how things are configured. You can actually tell it as far as what needs to be done, and it just does it. It abstracts your resources, so if you have stuff like password file, or a better example is services. You want to start a service on one platform, say BSD, it's one way. On Red Hat Linux, it's another way. Puppet actually abstracts it to the degree where it doesn't matter. It's a client-server model. Unlike CF Engine, it actually has a full client-server model where it's actually downloadable resources. It's platform independent. It's more, for pretty much all major universes. Relationship and execution order. Puppet actually understands the process, or when you're describing your recipe, the step-by-step process to create a Puppet, to actually install a Puppet service. Can be used with servers and desktops. This is one of the things, I mean, we'll talk primarily servers today, but honestly, you can use it for stuff like Mac OS, install manager of Macintosh desktops. Again, make it so with the recipes. And basically, you show correctness and repeatable. They're pretty much going to be repeatable ad nauseum. If you run the same Puppet recipe, you know, first time and the 100th time, it does the same thing. If it changes in any which way, it will fix it. Any questions so far? Not only to install, but maintain and upgrade. Again, that's sort of related to the first, the previous item, where it actually makes sure, again, it's not only can run the Puppet recipe the first time, but make sure it updates software after the third or fourth time. Really, the analogy of it is what's described on this slide. Many moons ago, obviously, people primarily programmed in assembly. I mean, nowadays, you very rarely get someone to program in assembly. Maybe for low-level projects like that. System administration nowadays is pretty much command line and files. You're actually typing via an SSH terminal, modifying config files. Obviously, nowadays, you use much more higher-level for programming languages, much more higher-level C, C++, what have you. This shows C in this example, but any modern programming language. With Puppet, it's all about resources. Luke Kinney's really whole goal is no SSH. And really, I mean, before we started using Puppet, I mean, we used SSH obviously quite a bit. We had multiple, it's not uncommon to have 20 or 30 SSH clients on our desktop. Puppet, the whole goal is to get rid of that. Okay, who's using Puppet? As you can see here, a lot of high-level companies. This is a list that Luke Kinney's sent out to us. Google being one of the big ones, and again, in their case, they're using it for their desktops. So it's not server only. It could be for Macintosh desktops. Here's a brief overview of how Puppet is organized. It's centralized managed, so you have what's called a Puppet Master. That Puppet Master manages all your nodes. In this case, the nodes are listed here as clients. But you have a Puppet Master that manages or sends out the actual information to these clients and what you want to do to them. And obviously, in most cases, you want to use some sort of version control, this caseless subversion, but it can be whatever you want to use. It can be Git, CVS, what have you. And what happens is once it executes, it'll send that report back to the Puppet Master.
Okay. Yeah. What was in blue?
That's actually details as far as it lists the actual communication of how it communicates to the server. XML, RPC, or HTTPS. And then sends a report back the other way.
Can you back that slide?
Yeah, sure. You can't see it. I stole it from Puppet's website, so. Abstraction.
Yeah.
Again, the beauty of Puppet is all about abstraction. In this case, here's an example from Debian, where you do a normal package install via apt-get, install OpenSSH server, you edit a config file, in this case SSHD, config, restart that service. In Puppet becomes this. You have resources, a package, a file, a service. You then have a title that describes that package, file, service, in this case SSH, SSHD config, and SSHD, and then what's called an attribute to actually make sure the package is installed, download a source file from the Puppet master, or, in this case, the last one, make sure it's running the actual service. So it actually abstracts, as you can see here, at a much higher level. Does anyone have any questions on this slide? One thing I'll mention here is, obviously, we'll go a little bit more depth later, but with Puppet, that configuration file, where it's looking for SSHD config changes per platform. On Debian, it's in one location. On Red Hat, I believe it's in a different location. So with Puppet, you can actually specify per platform where that goes. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Currently, there are built-in 24 different package types or resources. Users in NetInfo, UserEd, PWM, and there's support for pretty much every major Unix operating system. Currently, Unix is not available yet.
It's not available?
No. Reuse. Unlike CF Engine, you can pretty much reuse your software with Puppet. Once you develop it, the whole goal is to reuse it again and again via inheritance or other things we'll talk about. Pretty much with Puppet, your infrastructure now is a program. So you're running a system program to deploy your applications. And again, in this case, it shows an example between Debian and Red Hat. So again, what was in Debian was apt-get, it was Yum on Red Hat. With FreeBSD is obviously different. With Debian, again, the perfect example is SSH and SSHD to start the service. With Puppet's recipe, it actually becomes much more transparent. You then start the service. It automatically determines where stuff should be started. It just knows. Again, it's so abstract in that respect, you don't have to worry about it. Any questions so far?
How does it know? Is that something in built or is that something in configured for?
That is built into Puppet itself. Puppet actually has all that information built into the application itself. Factor is the other thing as far as describing how the server is, and we'll talk about that later, factor itself. As far as Puppet, this is an example of a factor variable, which we'll talk about a little bit later, which determines if you're on, say, Darwin, OS X, do one thing. If you're on, say, Red Hat, do another thing. And it determines, based on that variable, conditionally determines what's there. So that's one of the that's one way of doing it, as far as actually making it much more robust and much more platform independent. Obviously, Puppet can't know all about those details. What it can do is abstract, say, package manager, abstract service restarts, abstract, let's say, passwords, installing or adding a new user to a password, adding a new user to a password. It really becomes one solution for your problem. So you don't have to, again, the goal is not to rewrite every, so let's say you install SSH service. You design it to install it once and run many. Obviously, the network effects for that is tremendous. So, obviously there's an upfront time to test and debug your code. But in the end, if you're deploying, say, 250 servers plus, it's obviously well worth it. Even to the effect of, say, 100 or even 10, in most cases, it's worth it. Completeness. Again, Puppet really, if you document it via, say, a Word document or other method, it's pretty much a manual process. So Puppet had basically destroyed the whole process from beginning to end of how does that install service on an application?
Relationships matter. In the traditional system administration, relationships matter, but they're also often implicit. And what I mean by that is, it's normally you do A, you do B, you do C. As far as in this case show, you do an apt-get install, you edit the config file, you start the service. So again, it's implicit with your normal command line options. With Puppet, you can actually put that along to Puppet's recipe. So in this case, here's a class that we define to say install a package, ensure it's installed, edit this file, ensure after the package is installed. So do not do it before the package is installed. And then subscribe to the package SSH config up here to make sure if there's any changes that happen to either of those things, again, if the package is installed or updated, or the config file changes, automatically restart the service. Puppet just does that automatically. Any questions on this line?
Yeah, are you putting some form of address files that would be particular to each individual machine? Like, I can imagine some of my hesitation needs would be
different.
Yeah,
I mean, there's three different ways, and I will talk about that in a future slide, but there is different ways to actually define a config file and push it out to the actual client or node. So therefore, you can have one node to have one SSH config file, another one have a totally different one. And again, Puppet Master manages all that for you. So from your end, as long as you know ahead of time, that's one of the other things that's the beauty of Puppet, is you can actually, you can essentially manage it all through the Puppet Master, and you can push all those things out from the Puppet Master to each node. So therefore, in the end, you don't have to ever go to that machine and edit the config file. And in our case, just to tell you a little bit of information, we actually have those config files read-only, so therefore, they purposely can't be edited by someone on that machine itself. So you actually have to go to the Puppet Master to edit that file. And it automatically gets replaced. If someone winds up by mistake changing it, Puppet will change it back because of the way it's set up.
I have a question.
Sure.
I noticed there that, like the step you have marked after, the value begins with an initial cap, but earlier in that class definition, it was lowercase.
Yes, that's the syntax of Puppet. Puppet defines it where you say you want to define the package, you call a specific instance of that package, you use an uppercase to initialize it and specify the SSH after. So that's it specifically defines that package listed up at the top. So that's the way that the language of Puppet itself works. But as you can see here, it's not procedural. That's one thing, again, it's declarative. It's not procedural as far as you don't say do A, B, and C. You define it by do this first, then do this second, do this third. You define a step-by-step process in your dependencies. So you actually define, there's an after and there's also called a before. So you can do something before something happens. And again, with Puppet itself, you can encapsulate all those resources by what's called a class. It's similar to object-oriented for other programming languages. Okay, what is Factor? Factor is really integral part of Puppet. It allows you to flex and display all sorts of details about the specific target, be it operating system, be it CPU, be it amount of memory, hardware space, what have you. In fact, there's a bunch of open source or freely available factors you can add to Puppet itself. It's part of Puppet itself. You can run independently of Puppet. Obviously, it makes sense to use it directly with Puppet with the variables. And all those variables are inserted directly into Puppet's recipes. So at any point in time, you can use one of those variables that's already in the factor and determine, say, operating system. If using Red Hat, do this. If using FreeBSD, do this. And you can create your own custom facts and distribute those custom facts to all your Puppet nodes. The other thing, too, is it will actually detect if there's any change, say, in, let's say a perfect example is, I think, the CPU load. Is that one of the things, like, what's a good, kind of a good example? What? This space is a good example. If this space changes, the factor will actually update that the next time it runs. Okay, example of factor output I have here on my Macintosh.
is some variables here. Can you guys all see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So in this case, on this Mac, it shows physical memory, only 1 gig. Shows you know, as far as it was scrolled a little bit, might help other examples. Shows you the processor speed, which obviously is important. You shrink this window. Puppet version, obviously. Stuff you can get as far as Mac OS version, kernel version, factor version. There's, again, other information you get, too. Most of the stuff, the basics, IP address, host name, stuff like that, is pretty easy that you're going to use quite a bit. It's available in factor. And again, there's other things that we've developed ourselves, such as we had to use a RAID controller and whether or not, which RAID controller we're using. So you can easily add your own. Configuration files, as we discussed, mentioned before. They're managed via three primary methods. Direct file, which that was the first example. What's called template files, or via ERB, Ruby's built-in template engine. And I believe it's pronounced, I never get it right, Aregis or Regis. It's a good god. But it's new to Puppet, and actually is it's a Puppet type written by Red Hat that allows line-by-line editing of a configuration file. So that configuration file can be updated line-by-line by Aregis itself. Okay, what does an example of a file template look like? You have, in this case, a little bit more advanced than traditional. Before, with the first example, we showed just one source. But with Puppet, the beauty of it is, you can default to use the standard NRPE config file. In this case, if there's one in that folder that has by host name or a fully qualified name, again, those are factor variables, use those, take those as precedence first. So therefore, on a certain server, if you're, you want a special configuration file by host name, you can do it, and use that one instead. By default, use the standard NRPE file. And again, same thing would apply to SSHD, any other config file. And again, in this case, it does by order of precedence. So we'll always look for this first, this one, and in default, if nothing else is available on a Puppet master, to the standard default config file. In this example, this is using ERB's template engine. It's a little bit more advanced configuration example, but the bottom line is you can do not only select certain config files, but allows you in the actual config file on the server specify variables and plug them in to that config file. So you can actually do stuff like IP address, stuff that is unique to that specific server, and just plop them right in for your request, which factor. So all those factor variables are also passed on to ERB. And in this example above, I created Puppet not only has factor variables, you can define your own variables for that specific node. So in this case, we told it for use XM setup, use anti-spam for this certain template, use custom if it's this template based on a host name, otherwise default to the one at the end. And again, it's sort of a mix and match of the two, best of both worlds. Not only allowing templates, but you can also use the built-in standard in files. Are we just
Sorry, variables from ERP files put into the factors?
No, there are actually public variables also.
Are the variables you can use using ERP to generate a config file limited to the factors that you can
put? No, you can actually, this example you see here, this is another variable I should explain, is actually defined by me in our Puppet for that node, specific node, use this as this variable. If using Plan AV, Plan D actually, true, install this into the XM config file. So that's not a factor variable. That's actually something that's defined for that node specifically. Fine?
Let me just add something. In an eRuby template, you can put any Ruby code you want.
That's correct, too. You can actually do Ruby if you really want to.
Yeah.
So. I mean, in this case, it is. So, I mean, it's not just limited to just F and N, which is part of Ruby itself. You can do literally anything if you really want to. I mean, you can go really crazy if you really want to. I mean, to me, I would keep it kind of simple in the template file, but you could go crazy.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
So are we just, as new Republic, that's really standing on December. It was informally available prior to that. Currently supports, I believe, Red Hat 10.0s. I have not compiled it on stuff like FreeBSD or other operating systems, so I can't speak if it will work on the other ones. But it's available from Red Hat. It's a formal Red Hat project in Regis itself. It allows for line-by-line editing. So it really puts Puppet to the next level, where before most people were managing Puppet via ERB or, you know, flat config files. This allows you to literally say, set a certain variable in that config file that already exists to be whatever and change it if it's not to your liking. And again, with Puppet, make sure it repeats it every half hour, make sure it's correct. So if someone edits the file the wrong way, Puppet will push it back automatically. And again, I talked briefly about node classification. Puppet defines actual hosts or servers as nodes. So in this case, what I want to talk about is there's simple. Puppet itself as a language is not complicated. It doesn't have full object oriented, but it does have some of the basics, such as inherit. You can't do multiple inherits, but you can do a base one inherit down. You can do includes, in this case, include another file, another actual class. That's primarily the way we do it. We don't actually do inheriting because it just, I think, complicates it. But you can do that if you want to. And again, in this case, the ones in red define actual servers that exist on the network. So those are each different servers on the network. And in this case, as the example, inherits the base node, which has, let's say it has four or five includes of other classes. And the way to think of it is now, each host has a resource catalog. That resource catalog comprises of not only factor variables, your variables, again, you can define the node. And that previous example didn't show it, but you can actually, again, include variables and create your own factor variables, and each of those get pushed to the actual server when it runs it every half hour. Okay, the configuration process, what does that entail? It retrieves the resource catalog, again, the factor variables, the actual variables you define, the actual recipes you set up from the central server. It determines what order should actually execute them based on your before and after statements you put in your recipe. And then it will check if something's changed in that resource since the last time it executed, it'll note it and actually try to fix it if necessary. So again, the beauty of Puppet compared to, say, running a shell script or Perl script, where the first time you run it, you do an install. Obviously, you can't run it again if you want to, the next time. But Puppet, it doesn't matter how many times you run it. It'll know, it won't care, just make sure it stays correct, make sure it's correctly set up. So therefore, if something gets removed, let's say a package, Puppet will reinstall it automatically. So that's, again, a difference compared to a shell script or a Perl script, what have you. It will automatically make sure it's correct. And again, rinse and repeat by default every half hour. And again, there is options to say, run this every 2 hours, different time schedules, but by default, Puppet runs every half hour. Transactions for each resource. It goes and gets retrieves the current state of the information, the current state of that machine, again, primarily by factor, but also by the other information you can get on the machine. Compares to the desired state. Once it actually the desired state is checked, if there's any changes with it, it actually fixes it if necessary, or just locks it. Configurations are idempotent. Again, I've talked about this or alluded to this before. Obviously not infinite, but it allows you to really manage it through the whole life cycle. Meaning you can actually, again, run it again and again. You can add stuff to your public node information and add, say, let's say you want to add subversions to that new server. You didn't have it before. You just include it to the config file for that certain node and just dump it. So again, you don't have to worry about that. Resource sorting is done via dependencies. And again, Puppet itself internally creates a resource graph. So it says it's going to execute this first, then this, then this, then this. And in some cases, it actually executes in a different order.
Now, it's important to note that lacking dependencies, the order just indeterminate.
The order is what?
Lacking dependencies, the order is indeterminate.
Yes, that's correct. So ideally, in our case, we very specifically define order for what gets installed by
by when. So therefore, we make sure of a puppet. You can make it, let puppet just do its own thing and figure it out randomly. But honestly, in the end, if you really care about what you're installing, you may want, say, let's say you want Apache to be installed before PHP gets configured, as an example. So you want to make sure that gets done first, as opposed to letting Puppet decide what's gets installed. You'll get different errors. So if you want stuff that's repeatable, ideally you want to try to use as much as possible before and after what gets run. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Puppet's internals. It scales like HTTPS because it's primarily based on that. It uses right now currently all communications via XML, RPC, as a previous graph and a previous diagram showed, over HTTPS. Eventually, Luke plans on going to REST. Not yet, I don't know when the time frame is for that, but right now it's all XML and RPC.
Could you decode what those backends are?
XML RPC means it's a standard started, I believe, in the early 2000s. It's just a method of communicating XML files via HTTP. So it actually passes its via like a get, put, and set. Actually, REST is really those defines, but XML it passes via XML future files. So it passes back and forth.
And REST?
And REST is the next level above that. It's all HTTP communication back and forth, but it has a standard get, put, and set. So it actually it's three primary ways of communicating at the low level.
One thing that's important about REST is within the URI, you can tell what it's doing.
Yeah.
It's a very defined and readable URI with methods baked into the URI.
I mean, yeah, for an average Puppet user, you'll never see this stuff. It's nice to know as far as REST is a little bit more efficient than our XML RPC as far as the byte size and how big it is and as far as scaling. You start going to thousands of computers, it takes bigger deals than, say, a few hundred. You have a question back then?
Yeah, I was going to ask about what the reasoning for
Galleon
from.
That's
the other one was, say somebody who's already using it with a CD change?
It would probably be more of a performance change. As far as from a language perspective, there's not going to be any difference. From a behind the scenes performance, eventually there will be a performance difference. So it will scale better. And Luke also has a few other things. That there are a few other limitations. I do list at the end the pros and cons of Puppet. Puppet itself, like anything, has its limitations. And all, of course, to make sure all the communication is secure, it uses SSL, or a certificate authority of its own. You should obviously create your own public certificate authority, or CA, but Puppet has its own. It's actually pretty easy to use. So that's one of the nice things to make sure, again, all communication is done securely. It's not done through open channel. In our case, we actually put on a private network just for extra security. You don't have to. By default, all the information goes to syslog. In our case, we like to use syslog NG. We like to centralize all our logs. So all our nodes, our servers, go to a centralized log place. We can actually parse the Puppet data and get some sort of feedback. There are other reporting tools out there for Puppet. They're still kind of in the very early stages, but they do work. I mean, they do. To me, syslog is the most effective. We just parse it looking for certain information or stuff that's not correct. Language and library. Really, the way I look at Puppet is it's really a resource and a tool. So, like, again, talking about the screen I showed a few slides ago, where it talks about C and C++ as an abstract language library, really, with Puppet, it's about resources, again, managing those resources. Client reporting. Again, I talked about it before, the syslog, you can do a few other things where graphing actual data to a screen and show you, let's see how many proper executed commands have done in the past hour. You can show some graphs. Again, to me, syslog is the most efficient and best way of doing it. The pros and cons of Puppet. Really, the way I look at it is Puppet forever changes the way you think about administration. Puppet now becomes more of administration becomes more of a process than a task. And what I mean by that is you're really programming, doing system programming to automate your administration, as opposed to going to an SSH client, logging in, and doing commands manually. Obviously, it requires a little bit more thought process, a little bit more planning, but when you start managing more and more servers, it pays off in the end. Relationships. Again, Puppet
comparative to the other languages out there, other automation tools out there, it understands like relationships, which in my opinion is a big part of the advantage of Puppet. Make consistent configurations that always work. Again, the beauty of Puppet is it's not only can you run it the first time to install something, but you can run it again and again to make sure it always works. External node classification. We actually use this in our business. Is Puppet has, again, you can do it in a config file, a Puppet config file, say, specify this node has X, Y, and Z installed. But you can use an external node classification or LDAP. We use LDAP in our case. So if you're in-house using LDAP internally to manage your servers, Puppet can use it. And honestly, it's got a good open source community. The user group on Google is very useful, very helpful, and I'll send that, I'll send you, or put it up at the end of the presentation what's the URL. Okay, what are the cons? It's currently rich with complicated configuration files. What I mean by that is, again, if you have really complicated config files that you're managing, SSHD is not a perfect example, but let's say Apache. Again, Regus should help that, but it's still early in the stages of development. So honestly, if you're dealing with really complicated config files, you may not want to put it in Puppet. You may want to leave it as a manual process. Or you may want to push it as one config file from Puppet Master. Scalability issues. It's by default, unfortunately, uses WebRec currently, which is part of Ruby. You can scale. It really, when you start getting about 100 servers or VPSs, it starts getting its limitation. When you go past that, you're better off using a proxy setup.
Load balancing?
Load balancing, even module, and the module is a possibility. Documentation, in my opinion, the wiki is slightly lacking. It needs improvement. In our case, at least from what we've seen, 64-bit operating systems, it's a really, as Ruby is a fault, it's a memory failure, without question. It doubles the memory Ruby, and it's because of the way it handles variables. And that's, again, not part of Puppet, that's really the fault of Ruby itself. Administration really becomes much more system programming. So again, like I said before, it can be a pro as far as you plan out the stuff, but it's con as far as ad hoc stuff becomes more a task. Honestly, test. You have to test your stuff much more, and Puppet allows you to do stuff like tagging for a development server to test out the recipes before you deploy to all your servers. Because obviously, at the end, if you have bad code, you can break your whole entire network in one fell swoop. So, like any automation system, it has its positives as far as it helps save you time. It can also help you cause you less of grief and headaches. I'll talk briefly on this one, and the next slide we'll talk about CF Engine. I'll let that, I'll really pass that slide. But currently with Capistrano, honestly, it's more for Ruby on Rails and application development. A few of my clients I've talked to, I mentioned about using Puppet for also application deployment. It's definitely doable. Depends on how you're set up with your Puppet, your security, and your permissions, but it's definitely doable to deploy with Puppet applications for your own development. Capistrano is really on top of SSH, so it's honestly one level above SSH in terms of your setup, where really Puppet is a full client server implementation. No resource abstraction, so there's no way to abstract a certain service or package install. It all has to be done manually per your different operating system. So if you're really running a multiple operating system environment, you're better off not using Capistrano. And again, it's similar to scripting, just like I mentioned, the no resource abstraction. And for anyone who wants these are the resources I recommend. We obviously have from Reductive Labs, the creator of Puppet, the source code, recipes, wiki, documentation, and bug tracker. This is the user group online on Google Groups. And this is all our New York City Puppet groups. We're going to have a meeting after. Can I have this meeting, Brian?
Yes.
Yeah. And the book, which great book. It's a little outdated now. It was written last year. Pulling Strings with Puppet, Configuration Management by James.
I don't think you can see it.
Well, anyway, it's a book on Amazon. If you type in Puppet on Amazon, it's like, I think, the number one book listed for Puppet, unless you get, like, hand puppets. And as far as ERB template information, you can go to Ruby's website. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah,
What about this lag in the CF painting?
Actually, that's going to be the next presentation. Talk about the difference between the two.
So one thing that you didn't mention that I find very, very powerful is Puppet models.
Yes. I want to do more of an intro of how Puppet is, depending on the audience. As far as if you want to talk about that, you definitely do.
Models are just reusable, self-contained chunks of Puppet manifests, files, etc., that you can take from one Puppet installation to one another and another and another. It really facilitates sharing what you've done.
Well, the better way to think of it is it allows you to create a resource that doesn't exist in Puppet. There are a few out there from Puppet itself. So you can abstract, I'm trying to think of a good example. Let's say, you can abstract, there's something that's, there are a lot of now resources built into Puppet that really, for most people, it's perfectly fine. You'll never have to develop your own module. But there are also.
Yeah, and I just wrote one today for VSFPP for work. All that you have to do is specify the FPP directory, and you're done.
Yeah, so I mean, it does allow you to get much more complicated a Puppet. Again, unlike, say, CF Engine, where you have to manually deploy that to your server, and actually, the source itself from CF Engine is closed source, you can actually deploy that out to all your server, well, in this case, a module, so it sits on Puppet Master. Well, you actually can do stuff like factor variables, too, and actually push it out automatically to all your clients.
I have a question about Puppet's implementation.
Yeah.
You said it's written in Ruby.
Yep.
And you said you used Python Red too. Other things. I'm kind of curious on why the choice of using Ruby and secondary, was it also just using straight Ruby or did you guys
I'm not the developer or original developer. Luke Kinesis is the original developer of Puppet. As far as his choice of Ruby, his discussion on it was one, it was cool. It was something he looked at quite a bit as far as Ruby itself and what it can do and features. And as far as specifically why, you have to ask him.
Okay.
But overall, what I got the impression was, it was the flexibility he needed to do Puppet. Where I think he looked at a few other programming languages and it just didn't fit.
He did. There's a paper on
reductive
website.
There is, okay.
One of the takeaways I got why he chose Ruby is one of the easiest languages for somebody to pick up and be able to create a domain-specific language.
Okay, and actually behind the scenes too, he uses YAML, which converts it to another markup language, which basically everything you see as far as your factor variables, all that stuff is pushed into this YAML file that then Ruby processes. So it sort of feeds your resources and converts it to your YAML file, which makes it faster to process. It's not a machine language, but it's a higher level that makes it easier to process on the actual node. So that's one of the advantages too that it does.
So that's the next question.
Yeah.
Have you ever run it to the point where it's just failed miserably, where it can't handle the load?
On Puppet Master or Puppet, the client itself? Well, Puppet Master, like I said, WebBrick is a big limitation. Where you start about 100 clients, it starts hitting resource limitations. As far as the Puppet Master itself, it needs to be a somewhat beefy machine. We use 2 gig in our case of memory, and we have one dedicated CPU. We use a lot of VPSs in our setup. So we have one dedicated CPU cycle, or CPU to it, and also 2 gig of memory. And tomorrow we're managing about 200 to 250, and it's more than enough. As far as the client side, in our case, again, the mention of the memory part of it is, we decided, suppose we're running it interactively, which the Puppet pushes or says, on the actual node, check to see if it needs to be run. It gets put, changes every half hour. We chose to put it as a cron file. That's the other option, to run it in memory or as cron. I didn't touch on that. We decided to run it as cron because of it just less memory requirements. It absolutely doesn't sit in memory all the time. And the other thing is, then you lose the interactivity. You can't stay on a Puppet Master. Immediately do this task. That would be a Puppet run, it's called. So you lose out that fact. You lose out the instantaneous, but you can, every half hour, just automatically runs. As far as screwing up, the beauty of it is, you look closely at the log files, it'll tell you what's going on. As far as screwing up Puppet, obviously, you can do it. You can actually make Puppet inoperable if you're not careful. You can have Puppet manage itself. So you could, in theory, screw up Puppet so badly that it won't run. there are ways, what we do is we have a feedback loop where we actually check that local YAML file to see if it's been updated within a half hour or hour. If it hasn't, it starts alerting us as far as we're knocking us and say, hey, it hasn't been updated in a while, what's going on with this machine? So it actually allows, in our case, we allow some of our customers that are managed hosting customers to root access. So if they really decide to screw things up, we get alerted right away that something's going funny on there.
So what about numbers of packages installed on machines, size of complexity of concrete files and stuff? I talk from someone who's done like a split Apache store with a few thousand virtual hosts.
Yeah.
Right. And so have people rolled out stuff like public managing dynamic config files of that size?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you look at... Can you repeat the question?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. He's asking as far as, has anyone deployed dynamic config files in a large environment? And the answer is yes. I mean, in Google's case, 6,000 desktop PCs.
So that's not a PC versus host.
Well, I mean, no, each of those, if you have configuration files, each of those have to push the configuration file to all those different PCs.
No, but I'm saying one PC, one web server, 6,000...
You start, there are some things that Luke talks about, there's some discussion on the forums, we start going at a scale, there's certain things you do have to do in terms of performance, some of it's not been released out from Google, for example, but in general, the performance has been pretty good for most requirements. When you start, Luke is focused on that as it's becoming more and more of an issue.
It's almost like running every half hour, the fact that it takes 10 seconds to generate that config file. Not a huge problem every half hour.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, his answer is, usually in our case too, it's the same thing, is it only takes about 30 seconds to run Puppet per server, which is not that long. I mean, considering all the stuff it's doing, we're running, in some cases, about 100 different packages we're managing. When I say packages at the class level, each, you know, let's say Apache as an example, that's one of the class.
What about running it on something like a jail host, something else that's got like a few hundred virtual servers running Puppet in each of those
on the same market? Shouldn't be, I mean, again,
has anyone done it? Like, has there been feedback from people that have done, you know, one Puppet installed 200 virtual servers on one machine, 200 packages?
I mean, yeah, I think you're running some more limitations of the jail setup itself as far as just performance. I mean, Puppet can be somewhat CPU, depends on what you're doing, of course. I mean, some of it really is depending on what you're installing, what you're managing. Obviously, the more stuff you're managing, the more stuff you're installing. It's most of the stuff, to answer your question as far as setup, is the initial setup takes the most time. Because it has to go through installed packages, set up config files, do whatever. After that, it's just simply checking to make sure stuff has changed or not. So it's very lightweight. Again, like I said, no more than 30 seconds, which is not that long. To me, that 30 seconds every half hour is well worth the CPU time to make sure I have a correct setup, and instantly it's correct setup. I'll go to you next. Go ahead.
So, I'm managing like 750 clients, Puppet, and I'm wondering, we're running Puppet 0244 and Factor, I don't remember the version number, I'm sure it's pretty out of date right now, which the best upgrade path. Do I upgrade first on the server, do I upgrade the client first? I ran into a bug early on where I had the server with one version higher than the clients, and
The answer is which to upgrade first. If you're running 750 clients, he has an older version of Puppet. My recommendation is definitely to upgrade the Puppet Master first. Puppet Master has definitely been improved in terms of not only memory leaps, but also performance. Since you said
2.4.4.
Yeah, right now they're 2.4.7, so it's three releases. That was it was one of the Muppet names. I forget the name, but he names it by Muppet characters.
Okay.
So you're pretty old now. I think that's almost 8 months old, 9 months old.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, so I without question, do the Puppet Master first. But there are some differences, especially with Factor, that there's also been some bug fixes with Factor, too. So definitely, I would run a test environment if you're really not sure, obviously, with anything like this. You run a test environment, testing your Puppet Master and a Puppet. And see how all your recipes go and do, you know, basic tests. Because there have been some changes with Factor especially. There was a bug that we anticipated or had with Factor timing out. So in other words, the server would get very busy and it would actually, Factor would just crap out and actually then it would error everything out and it would just give false results as far as like configuration information, like in our case, a RAID array. So it would be installing, uninstalling, SmartD based on what it thought was installed. So that was not good. But that's been fixed since then. That's, 2.4.7 to 2.4.5, it's been pretty stable, honestly.
All right, thanks.
Any other questions?
It runs electric on the client side as well?
On the client side, it's its own client as far as what it's running.
Ruby has built in.
Yeah, Ruby itself has, the answer is, what is it running on the client side? It's running that, it's communicating.
It doesn't run the servers.
Right.
Yes, that's the client communicating with the puppet master. The puppet master itself is running a web server, more or less. It's, you know, obviously, that's how it's communicating via the XML, RPC.
Right.
So as far as the client, again, you can run as a cron, you can run it manually, you can also run it as daemon by default. The daemon is just sitting there in memory saying, okay, do nothing, do nothing, do nothing, then the half hour comes by. Go do something. And it goes and pulls down the information. So it's a pull down from the actual client. It's not a push. It's a push after the client requests it. Question back there?
So, my curiosity, the puppet master setup, is there any sort of support for running it in any other method other than using WebRig? Can it run as
yes.
CGI or?
Well, as a CGI.
I'm just saying, you know, is there any way of doing it through some other method?
Well, yeah, you can actually do, you can run Mongrels the best way. Mongrel, which is part of Ruby, which is, it allows you to run, it's much more performance than WebRig itself.
Okay, but why do you use Mongrel over some other methods?
Because Ruby.
Okay.
Quite simply. I mean, Ruby is much more performance than WebRig. I mean, you can do, what you do is you load that, in our case, we put Apache as the front end. Apache just passes the proxy information to Mongrel. Mongrel does the processing back end. So again, in that case, you can have multiple, you can even go more complicated, have multiple servers with your Mongrel setup if you really want to. There's ways. Again, by the, out of the box though, Puppet Master doesn't have those type of things built in. It's sort of kind of have to do it ad hoc.
Yeah, I'm trying to gauge, you know, how you guys do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question.
A lot of people who don't like Mongrel.
I don't like Mongrel either.
I'm just curious to see that you guys are using it. If you don't like it, you know, is there a different, you know,
point
in there, or is it just?
The reason why we use it in our case is it works. Put it simply. I didn't want to go crazy with, again, the performance. I mean, as we grow, we'll probably want, in our case, again, 200-250 nodes, which is more than adequate. If you start going more than that, we may hit another wall too. So with that said, we may do something different. Right now, that environment is fine. As we grow, you know, 750 might be a good example where it may break, I'm not sure. Or you may need a really, really powerful machine, CPU-wise, too.
Just so you know, we're using is a Sun X2200, Focus Solaris, with 4 inches of Mongo being load balanced by Apache. There's documentation on that on the Puppet Wiki.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of, all right.
Yeah, it seems to work. Again,
this claims the Mongo. So you can't do SSL, so you have to front end it with something you can't.
Right.
Right.
So just that stupid question. How many programs are you running to manage
your
Puppet, which is, you know, your Ruby?
I would not, because I've seen people set up Ruby so that the app set the right level to direct to
right.
It's a lot easier to do that than application 750. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like I said, you can't do voice, but it's kind of.
Yeah, I mean, look at, yeah.
You only do it once.
Right, you set up one. Honestly, I can't remember a lot of time I touched the puppet master once I got it up and running.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the actual. I mean, let me go back to the slide. Let me go back to the slide that shows really the diagram of how Puppet is set up. I mean, really, honestly, with Puppet itself, it's really about the actual recipes themselves you're dealing most of it. Once you get it set up, Puppet itself. Puppet Master itself is pretty easy to deal with. I mean, honestly, with stuff like Nagios and Cacti, in our case, we monitor it. Again, we want a feedback loop. You want to make sure it's working. So therefore, you want to make sure is it sending out the proper information. If it's not running, you've got a problem, obviously. I'll pass it away, actually.
So is there any logic in Puppet's notice when it's got getting cracked information and prevent itself from just deleting all of your packages?
Well, again, you have a feedback loop. You have, in our case, we use a syslog. We actually regular expression that syslog entry to see what's coming out. If the stuff is not what we're looking for or expecting, it raises red flags. So as far as beforehand, we answer.
So you know when it's late.
Well, no, but beforehand, as far as, I mean,
Computers will stop like an RM, that's RM.
Yeah, I mean,
all computers, my computer's
really good. But I mean, put it simply, I mean, obviously you have to start, you have to have a test environment too. If you're really deploying something brand new,
test environment that has shown you every possible scenario where you put it into production. I mean, I'm curious.
If 98%
of my manifest is gone between the last one and the current run, that's garbage unless someone tells me otherwise. Is there that kind of logic in
your
company? Yes.
If it gets bad data, just use the last working config.
Right.
So if you configure it, you may own
better. I ran into that today when I worked with Marshall, when I was like, couldn't just take case and take case and cash.
So, right. Yeah, if your configuration no longer compiles,
right.
Yes. Then it will use the old one. Second thing is that it does not have a default policy of, if I didn't say run it, disable it.
Right.
So that if your system suddenly forgets that you should install package X, it'll leave package X installed unless it picks up a bad configuration that says ensure package X is not there.
Right.
So to screw it up badly, you need to put in a policy that says remove this from all of my systems.
Yes.
In which case, there's nothing that any software would do to help.
Yeah, I mean, on top of that, about the dependencies, since Puppet has all these dependencies, if say a dependency fails, it just errors out saying all these other things do not run. So let's say we have a requirement to do, let's say install the service, SSHD, before adding a config file. It'll make sure if you can't find that package, it'll error out saying I can't do this dependency of editing that config file. So we'll actually make sure all those dependencies, if we have an error of something not installing properly, it'll error out saying all these other dependencies fail, and then we know something's going wrong.
It's just stuff like in the past, but when I've like most people, have handwritten this type of stuff for running certain things. And we end up putting checks in because occasionally the password server would go, here's 400 users, not 35,000. And so on the client side, you'd write logic that said, if the password falls 10% different versus last time, raise a red flag. And so sure, I'm just saying, people, if your Puppet doesn't find a fault, remove stuff that's not in, it's not syncing between a live set and database, it's actually being told what to do, then that answers my question.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Puppet in general, like I said, there's always risk with any automation system. To me, Puppet does kind of alleviate a lot of those risks. I can't say all of them. Again, if you're really going to be a terrible programmer and write bad code, it's not going to prevent you from doing that. No language will do that. The goal is to try to make it simple to manage and manage more effectively, again, as opposed to having to manually install, say, a package on every server. That's really the goal of the system, is to prevent that from happening. Where, there are commercial tools out there that do the same thing, but as far as the relative cost, you're talking millions of dollars as far as software. So it blows away. Puppet really blows away everything out there in terms of cost and also features. And again, if you want to do a segue to CF Engine, it would be a good segue to talk more about than CF Engine.
Harry.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Despite mentioning SVM there, does Puppet Master know how to code evolution control systems, or is that another process that you have to put into place?
That's another process you put into place. It's recommended with any good programming practice is to have to use some sort of version control. That's just using, again, that case it says, or whatever. It could be some version Git.
I use Git with a post or CFO to check out into where Puppet Master is expected to find it. So, I have my local working copy pushed into the repo, which happens to be on the same system. And that repo has a hook that CDs into the RAID directory, does git pull, and runs PubMed, like ST-S, no op, basically checks their tags.
Yeah, I mean, there are some hacks up or some scripts out there that actually integrate directly with Puppet. As far as you can have a commit that actually commits the changes and then, say, pushes up changes instantly or do something to that effect. I mean, in our case, no, we just use subversion. I'd rather keep them separate because, again, you can have another Puppet master that has all your information and you can push those changes over once you're ready to go. So you can actually have two different Puppet masters at least independent of each other. You can't have two puppet masters. That's one of the limitations. You can only have one puppet master communicate to your clients. You can't have two right now. There are some hacks out there, but honestly, it's not supported. Any other questions?
Is that a good way to scale it?
Is there any way to scale it?
Is that a good way to scale it? You have one puppet master for 500 clients and then one.
I don't
see
it.
Like
a
hierarchy
of
puppet masters?
Yes,
the
master of masters.
Yes,
you can, and that's successful.
I personally have not done that in our company, but I'm sure you could do something like that per organization. It's probably more of a based on company policies or topology than more of a technology issue. Any other questions? Ready?
Now, for those who missed the intro, Eric Moore is going to give. Just to remind anybody who missed the beginning, actually, I think 80% of you missed the beginning. I think we should have the meetings at 7 o'clock, the more I think about it. But the thing will come at 7:15, so we're Eric Moore is going to do a comparison of Puppet and CF engines, people know. Please say your questions loud, or Eric will repeat them, so just to keep it going. Because sometimes people in the back, especially the deaf ones, can't hear.
Sorry.
What is it for two or three moments?
Yeah, just use the arrows.
Arrows?
Yeah, that's all right.
So what do I have? That one. I don't have to do that one. All right. It should. There you go.
Just use the right
and left. Oh, right and left. That's nothing down.
Yeah, that's
fine. All right, so as I said, we're going to be doing, I'm going to be just covering quickly CF engine versus Puppet. And what I'm going to talk about briefly is that, you know, you had the CF engine talk back in the fall sometime. I don't know exactly when. I'm sure somebody told me at some point. I'm going to talk about CF engine 2, which is more or less the CF engine that you probably had to talk about, and a little bit about CF engine 3, which has come out in the last few months, I think. I forget exactly when it appeared on my radar. So Larry talked about Puppet, you kind of talked about CF engine past. I've used both, okay, so, and it'd be nice if I contrasted the two. So about me, I'm a chemist and a system administrator. I'm in my system administration, keeping my chemistry clusters running, and now I do a lot of, probably over half of my income at this point is derived from computer consulting through Brandor.com, which is Brian here's company, and I will tell you, having run at least three fairly large clusters, I probably would have killed myself without either of these two tools. It's just easily manual. I do specify there they're heterogeneous clusters, so I've got different things running on different machines, or different operating systems on different machines, or whatever. And that is one place that both of these programs serve excellently. When you've got a whole bunch of identical machines, it's relatively easy to push out a single. Now, here's my disk image it on all my machines, and everything works, but these programs will handle the more complicated case. of systems with different things installed on them. Both do roughly the same thing. They allow you to specify what you want running on the machines, and then arrange to have that running on machines. And if, as you said, a user has gone in and edited something, they'll edit that and make sure that whatever constraints you want imposed on these machines, whatever requirements you have that these machines do, are satisfied. main two things they have in common, aside from their aim.
Stay. Yeah, slideshow, but usually didn't move before. That's interesting.
Quick, you've got
10
seconds to slide.
Offer your current languages. You describe what you want the system to look like.
No, 5 seconds for slide. Press control on the lead.
So
now, you drop it on the floor now.
Alright, off the declarative languages. You describe what you want the system to look like, and then it'll look like that.
Yeah, it's on the slideshow for,
Now,
the PDF slideshow, so.
I don't know how to stop it.
There's a pause button somewhere.
I don't know how to use it if anyone does. Let's get back to the both are declarative languages. You describe what you want the system to look like, and then you get looked that way. Both involve these idempotent operations. And that means essentially they can be reversed. So if you think about the difference between the cat greater than and cat greater than, that will demonstrate the difference. Obviously, if you keep cat in greater, the same content into your file, it will get longer and longer and longer. And if you keep adding the same content over and over again, it will be bad. If you just set the file, have a certain content, it should be fine. Okay? CF Engine is quite old, at least as such things go. It's 1993. It's written by Mark Burgess from the University of Oslo. Puppet, Luke Keynes, it's a few years old. Mark Burgess has been thinking about configuration management, and about 6 years ago, he sort of gave up on developing CF Engine 2. He spent 5 years thinking about how best to write a new process. Thank you. And so he spent 5 years developing what he calls promise theory for CF Engine 3. And I'm not going to go into that in a great deal of depth, but it provides a theoretical background for describing what exactly this program is doing. And what it's doing, I'm going to go into that briefly, is it's saying that I'll make this promise that certain conditions apply on this machine, that this file has the correct content, the correct modes, that this process is running, whatever. So the interesting part of the talk, of course, is the differences. The basic organizing block for Puppet, I said Ruby there, I generated these slides this morning. Puppet is organized around abstract resources. So as he showed, you have a service type that describes, make sure this service is running. CF engine is based more around more primitive operations that you might, much like those you might type in a command line. So you could run a command to start the service. You could have that depend on the existence of a process or whatever. But it is a more low-level, less abstracted system. Puppet cannot edit files. You can replace a file in its entirety. You can use the ERB template language to describe a file. But if you have two separate blocks of code that want to edit the same file, you have something of a problem. Unless a particular resource exists to edit that file. Adding users would be the classic example. Because Puppet has a default user resource type, it's easy to add individual users. Without that, you would be adding, you cannot have add separately two different lines in Puppet to your etc password file.
The one thing to say about those with Puppet, there are some philosophical differences between the way Puppet and CF Engine is. I mean, CF Engine is definitely lower level, and Puppet's about defining types and managing through that type. So again, a password file, a perfect example as mentioned.
Right.
It manages through that password file without having ever touched the actual resource or file itself. So therefore, with CF Engine, you should edit two files or edit the same file with two different programs. Well, with Puppet, the goal is you should never have to do that to begin with. You should use a resource. If you start managing in one step, create your own resource to manage it, Puppet.
Right. I can get into a little bit more into that later.
There's a philosophical difference, and in some ways more based on Loop's design.
Although, as I said, or as he pointed out, the JS plugin does give you some of those sorts of capabilities to Puppet. And CF Engine is very powerful, if somewhat intimidating to some people, edited facilities. I mean, it has a pin if no such line is a primitive. So it checks to see if this line is in the file, and if it isn't, it sticks it at the end. Very handy for editing things like password files. But it is much lower level. But because of that, it has these much stronger primitives for editing files. It can make modifications to files, rather than in Puppet, where unless a default resource type exists, you're pretty much reduced to installing the file of your choice. Puppet, as he said, has a dependency graph. You can set what resources depend on others. CF Engine just sort of, or CF Engine 2 largely punts on this issue. It assumes that because all the operations are unimportant, if you really run CF Engine enough times, it will eventually get to the correct state. And this is true because those operations are unimportant. To the extent that they're orthogonal, if you can, and I have the example up there, if you try to run, install and run HTTP, and you do it in the wrong order, you try to run it and then install it, obviously, the running it fails. However, on the next run, since the install will succeed, the run will succeed. This design is based around the premise that machines break. And since you don't know in what way it's going to look broken, you don't necessarily know. Obviously, if the process dies, then just running it again will be fine. You don't want to you can check to see if it's installed first, but fundamentally, the basic premise of CF Engine is copyright upon, we can make sure it's installed twice and run it once, and it'll be out fine. It's a little bit clunky, we admit. CF Engine 3 does add a more fine-grained ordering, so it will, you, when you're assembling a set of resources you know are connected, like running HTTPD and installing it, you can assemble them in a resource bundle. You can specify the ordering of things within that bundle. Probably there, Puppet's got the, at least for CFMG2 versus Puppet, Puppet's way of doing it is certainly saner and probably better. Code reuse, yes.
It's been years since I've used CF Engine, but I'm absolutely positive that I had it set up so that when, for instance, an SSHD config change, it would immediately go through and restart SSH. I think they had a facility called Triggers on the classes. It's been a while, but I know I had that working.
It has
many places.
It has tools to that effect, but the basic,
it's more primitive. It's not like a full DAG as like Puppet has, but it does have like these trigger concepts where,
yes,
in effect, you can get it. You can get it working, and it's not that big a deal.
It's not that big a deal, but it's certainly a lot harder than it is in Puppet. Okay, Puppet, you say this depends on this.
Yes, it's not a full DAG, no, but it's definitely basic.
There are trigger facilities in there, but they are a later addition to language. When I first started using CF Engine 2, it lacked
the CF Engine back in 2001. So it's been there for a long time.
Yeah, but I was using it in 1998.
Well, okay, but it has been 7 years, so.
Yes. But it is definitely weaker than that, and they have added in CF Engine 3 because that was more tricky to get set up, just explicit inside this resource bundle. Run this, run this, run this, run this. For code reuse, Puppet uses a Ruby Java-like object orientation model. It's single inheritance, although it does have mixing classes like includes, which sort of operate. They're a mixing class, they don't quite operate like multiple inheritance. And that allows you a fairly substantial amount of code reuse. It also has a fine facility, well, I'll get into that more later, that allows you to generate resources that are composites of other resource types. CF Engine 2, I say it, I mean, it sucks. As far as code reuse goes, basically, I can't really be any more gentle than it gets stocks.
Now, you gotta include files, it's not that bad.
You can include files, but you can't readily knit, I mean, you can include the file over and over again, but there is no easy way to composite two different things. Unlike an inheritance model.
It was, I guess I remember, the invention was inherited. Like, you defined a class hierarchy. And you had multiple hierarchies. So that you could actually compose them in some way better than you can Puppet with single inheritance.
For the most part, no, because most of the determination is done by the class selectors, and if your class, your classes can be multiply inherited.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that, but the config still is specialized on each class. The configuration didn't inherit, just the membership in classes did, as I recall. It's been a little while. But it's not as good as the Puppet inheritance model. Puppet inheritance doesn't model this. Much better job of working out what code to run. CF Engine 3 has a number of definition facilities that allow much more fine-grained access to that sort of thing. And then you can just pull in chunks of stuff. And so you can introduce these reusable bundles, and you can parameterize these bundles. You can say, essentially, that I want a web server with this name, and it will create a file with that name plugin and all that sort of thing. And it does that in a much cleaner way, because it does have these, it does have a larger number of ways to define new sets of stuff. The language has expanded considerably in that aspect. So Puppet has this defined concept. If you go too much, you can define abstract resource types that configure a number of its more primitive resource types. So for example, for a user, the example I have here on the slide, you might want to distribute an authorized key file in addition to creating their home directory and the user in the exit password file. So you can create a resource that bundles these two resources together. CF Engine again, CF Engine 2, has some facilities along these lines, but Puppet generally did better. CF Engine 3 introduces these new definition facilities to allow you to make these resource bundles that are somewhat more flexible. The drawback to Puppet is that if you don't have a resource type for like a user in the user class, so it allows you to add users. You've got a user resource, and you can add that user, and it figures out, you know, this machine is running a standard etc password config, so I just need to have a log etc password, or it's in NIS, or it's in, well, some other system, I forget what they all are. And it will abstract that away and edit your files appropriately, adding lines to the appropriate files. CF Engine is somewhat poorer in that scale. However, the problem with Puppet is that if you do not have that resource type written, so if you do not have a user, there is a user resource type. There's not, for example, an Apache virtual host resource type. So if you have a system where you have to install different virtual hosts on different systems, you either have to write an Apache virtual host resource type that allows you to create additional virtual hosts, or your Apache config file has to be distributed on a per file basis. So you have to create the whole file in one ERB template, or create one for each host and distribute them by different host names. Because CF Engine works on has those editing primitives, you can just add a whole chunk of code, say, if this variable is set, if it's part of this class, add this chunk of the code, make sure this chunk of code exists in your Apache configuration file. So, and especially with CF Engine 3 and its more advanced bundling types, you have a greater ability to extend things from within CF Engine than to a certain extent you do have within Puppet. At some point in Puppet, the assumption is you'll just give up on using Puppet, break out to Ruby, write the Ruby resource as an extension to Puppet in Ruby, that will do all of the stuff you want and it'll work. Puppet is doing as far as stability goes. Puppet, as you said, has been raising Ruby. It's a little bit more resource hungry and a little bit less stable than CF Engine. CF Engine, well, I run two clusters using CF Engine. I never had a problem with one of my CF Engine processes crashing. Puppet, on the other hand, I have actually spent a couple hours writing software to monitor when it crashes and restarting it. Puppet's a little bit flaky. CF Engine 2, been running since 1993, at this point is rock solid, stable, and has no problems. CF Engine 3, as I said up there, I haven't used it much. It's only a couple months old. I haven't had a new cluster on which I should deploy it. I'm thinking of, you know, moving my laptop and desktop machine over to being configured through CF Engine 3 just for the practice. But I'm going to guess that it's somewhere in between the two in terms of reliability.
What are some of the issues you've seen with Puppet being
played? Primarily, the Puppet Ds, the Dans that run on the process, unless you're like Larry is, just running them out of crop, they just up and die for no reason. I'm sure there's a reason, but we have not been able to ascertain what it is yet. And we don't care. It just dies. So you have to monitor the Puppet D to make sure it's still up. The Puppet Master D, on occasion, if it's been running too long, simply stops responding to requests. So we've noticed that after a while, new configs stop getting pushed out. And all of a sudden, we have to go ahead and restart Puppet Master D. You got any comments on this?
Really stupid question. What do you monitor Puppet D and all your other stuff with?
Puppet D, I've just got a cron job that runs every 5 minutes or so and checks to see if there's a Puppet D process running, and if there is not, starts one. Puppet Master D, I've got in my standard Puppet config, I push out, I keep, whenever I check out new code, subversion, check out new code in my repository, I also stick the revision number and a file in there, and then the Puppet Master, one of the Puppet configs, pushes that file out to all of my hosts. So if that file differs from the file on the master server, obviously I have a problem. And when it differs on all 60 or some servers, obviously the Puppet Master just sort of hung off and isn't working.
In our case, we wind up using Nagios. Nagios, we actually have an event handler that actually says that, again, the ML file itself on the Puppet is old. That's when we run it as a DAM. If it was old to a certain point, so we restart it automatically. So we actually have Nagios. Again, we created a feedback loop using Nagios and having Puppet say, too old, restart it.
That's what I'm using to check that the two files have the same versions. It's going around and saying, hey, you know, you're running, you think that you've got 725 installed, the server thinks it's got 730, it's been like this for an hour and a half, maybe I should tell somebody that something's wrong. CF Engine, I never had to do that. Yeah. apparently the CF engine, or the Puppet people claim that the reason Puppet keeps dying on people is that it's built in flaw in Ruby that they can't fix.
The intrinsic stuff.
It's the intrinsic Ruby stuff, yes.
Yeah.
So
it's intrinsic. Ruby is a language that's only been around for 10 years, and C has been around for, what, 40 years?
10 years in C's existence, it feels more reliable than this.
And Perl works a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, I think this is just intrinsic Ruby suck, and not anything related to the age of the language.
Yeah. All right.
Basically, now let's go into the realm of pure unadulterated opinion. CF Engine 2, Puppet, CF Engine 3, versus doing it manually using some kind of shell script or Capistrano or something manual like that. You're an idiot if you're not, unless you've got three machines. Granted, my laptop and desktop are not yet puppetized or running under CF Engine, because there's only two of them. They have different configurations. It wouldn't make sense. If you are, for whatever reason, a Ruby shop already, Puppet is great. If you don't mind writing Ruby to extend, you know, various bits of Ruby code to extend your config and write custom modules and all that sort of thing, Puppet is great. If you're currently running CF Engine 2 and it works, I don't see any compelling reason to switch to Puppet. If I was to start a new cluster for some reason, a new set of machines, and I had to pick between Puppet and CF Engine 2, I would personally recommend Puppet. The dependency tracking, the various, the higher level of abstraction, the somewhat greater extensibility, I would say that, especially since Puppet was essentially written to be a better CF engine, it largely is better than CF Engine 2. CF Engine 2 versus, well, see, that's a typo in the slide. CF Engine 3 versus Puppet is a question of style. CF Engine 3 versus CF Engine 2, unless you're currently a CF Engine 2 shop, CF Engine 3 would be obviously the better one of the two. It's significantly improved in a lot of its fundamentals. And as far as CF Engine 3 versus Puppet, to a certain extent, a question of style. Which one you happen to like more for whatever reason?
The other reason Luke, again, the creator of Puppet, recommended obviously Puppet over CF Engine was the whole closed source extensibility of CF Engine. This has been his biggest argument. Yeah, I mean, as far as you can't manage, really at one point it was just him managing the original author of CF Engine.
Outside of half of this code, it's really great.
Yeah. It's what he uses nice. But you know, he's just can't do that. The stuff that he does, it works really well. And it doesn't need upgrades. It doesn't need a community. Craft hasn't been updated since 1990.
So in those cases,
fine.
So in those cases, the Darren Reed protocol license, sorry, I tried to that license works great. But if you actually look at the building as an open source community and actually use the room resources, it doesn't.
And obviously, CF Engine, his whole argument was he didn't want to commit. He didn't want to have these changes. So, again, since he had full control over the source, no one else did that input.
Yeah,
So that was the whole, genesis of actually Puppet itself.
Yeah, but what were the reasons you didn't want to make them?
That would have been us to walk into the company.
If I was the right patches to solve it, you can make them without question.
As far as, I don't know without question, I mean, as far as there is committed, I mean, it's not like it's fun by one person. There is
good. Yeah, there's two of them now.
Well, that's not full time, but as far as there are four other people helping.
I have six.
More than CF Engine. There are.
Right. Well, CF Engine is Mark Burgess, plus his grad students.
Can I have some comment in here? Basically, there were problems in CF Engine 2 that were widely recognized within both the CF Engine community. It took Mark 5 years to address these issues, 5+ years, to even consider releasing a new engine to CF Engine. Public wouldn't have even existed if this had been addressed when people started submitting patches and asking to add certain features to the think about that for a minute.
Well, on the other hand, to be perfectly honest, I have a good deal of sympathy for Mark Burgess's position that continuing to organically grow CF Engine 2 was not practical. That just adding patches to what was required at that point was a serious rethink of what the whole plan was, and that's what CF Engine 3 is. Is that he stopped, he said, I need to work from the beginning and come up with some plan for the whole new thing.
And that may happen with Puppet 2. Well,
no, that may happen with Puppet 2.
Because it's happened with lots of projects, but it's happened in open, in the community, that everyone's like, stop. Everyone, let's spend together, let's figure out how to do this together, and
let's just go do it. Let's get done fast. You can get done fast. Well, that's fine. Tangents are us. I'm out of material. So, people don't have any other questions. I'm going to just concentrate on my drinking. Yes.
Okay, so is anybody done, and I don't mean for this to continue any contentiousness. but while the argument is out on the table, you know, really with CF Engine and with Puppet, it seems like there's a certain amount of learning overhead when you bring this into an organization. There's a certain amount of management overhead, which means also a certain amount of, like, upgrade overhead and complexity as well. With all of that stated, where do these tools improve, or has anybody done anything to actually study or look at the effectiveness of using any of these tools over arduous use and comprehensive understanding of the core units utilities? When I say that, I mean, you know, set off. And kind of arduous approach to I like with CF Engine, because I use those utilities within CF Engine to make changes. It's like CF Engine, I have to use Puppet, but it integrates well with like a lot of the units. So I never, for instance, use the CF Engine built-in editing commands. Not just because I thought they were scary, and they are, but it's because I don't like that mentality on my approach. But I'm perfectly happy to use like set or something. CFN will look at that. I'm not sure probably will anything next to it. So
yeah,
you need kind of use both set plus the way to distribute automatically.
Can I ask then beyond this needing both, which I can appreciate, why? I mean, when it really comes down to what are the real practical nuts and bolts
both sides.
I understand the probably challenge if you're both adding 700 or 8 new users.
Yeah, well, to 700, but say yes, that's a bad example.
Sure.
Well,
let's just say you want to actually do what then are the real challenges and problems in that
there are challenges in that problem that these two will solve.
Well, more about insurance.
Yeah,
it's an error.
So I know if I build a new server, I let it run Puppet, boom, it's out of the firewall rule set, the latest, you know, NSGroup.com, all the latest local users.
It's a big thing. I mean, I still set up to get like a number of sites when I was in RCN. One of the things that we did with the CF engine setup is that every box that was managed from the CF engine was exact.
It was a remote.
And
so
the great thing about that is you want to put that on the down.
And you want to get
the CFS.